There are people and organizations who we have on our radio show list, and we have them on our list for years and years, and for some reason we don't quite get to them, but they're always in the back of our minds, and when we finally get to them, it's such a wonderful thing to finally connect. And today we are with two such individuals from Camp Sunshine, which is a really great organization that's been around for 30 years?
31 years.
31 years, exactly. Today we have with us Michael Cates, who is the executive director of Camp Sunshine. He has been involved with the camp since its inception in 1984. Michael is also active in the camp community and serves as a board member for both Maine Summer Camps and the Maine Camp Experience. We also have with us Nancy Sincotta, who is Camp Sunshine's psychosocial director. She works with campers and their families, and she's also on faculty at Mount Sinai after having worked there for 30 years. Thank you so much for coming in. I know that it's a busy time all the time at Camp Sunshine, and the fact that you're here, and Nancy, you're here having come up from New York, where you have to go back and follow the Mets. That's very important. So we're lucky to have you both here today. This is a thing for you. Both of you have been with Camp Sunshine a really long time.
We have since its inception, and it becomes part of your life.
Well, tell me about Camp Sunshine for people who are listening, and I can't imagine there are many that haven't heard of Camp Sunshine, but for people who are listening, give me a little bit of background on it.
Well, we are a camp that sets up retreats or respites for families that have a child with a life-threatening illness, and what kind of makes us a little bit more unique than any other camp is the whole family joins us at camp. The mom, the dad, the children, the ill sibling, as well as the well sibling, join us, and the whole family spend a week at camp. We run activities for the complete family, have the events. But what separates us, and I'll let Nancy speak a little bit more to that, is we also have a psychosocial program. So while mom and dad are enjoying camp, they also have the opportunity to build community, build resources, and get away from the challenges that they face on a regular basis, for even if it's just for a short period of time.
Talk to me about that, Nancy. I know that this is a really important piece, is the family, the dynamics, the impact of a long-standing or even a shorter illness on a child and a family. What is it that Camp Sunshine does that makes you different?
So camp is magical in a variety of ways. And as Mike was saying, I mean, we provide activities for families, every member of the family, to kind of, in a way, have an opportunity to get away from the illness, but we also provide avenues for people to talk about the illness. So it's actually kind of the blend of the recreational and the psychosocial piece that create this place where you can experience maybe more joy than you have experienced since your child was diagnosed, or since you were diagnosed if you're the child. And then you also can have an opportunity to connect with people on a level that you might not have in other places. So sometimes when you're diagnosed, you may feel isolated, your family may feel isolated, and that you're the only people in the world going through this experience. And, you know, when you're growing up and you're a kid, you really want to be able to be like everybody else and to know people that are going through the same journey that you are. And so you come to this place where suddenly everybody has a very similar experience to what you're going through. And I think it makes you feel like you're not alone anymore. And I think it makes families feel like they're not going crazy, that in fact, this is the path that people take, and these are the kinds of things that people think about and they experience. So it is a wonderful atmosphere for people to feel, I think, somewhat whole again. And I think that by having the whole family there, it allows people at every level of the family to connect with each other and to, I think, kind of leave having had what is a very therapeutic experience by virtue of all the different components of the program.
When Camp Sunshine began, it was weeks that were held at the beginning and the end of the summer. This was held at Point Sebago.
Correct.
And it was for kids with cancer.
Correct.
That was the initial program. But now you're on your own campus, still near Point Sebago, but you also have families coming in year-round. You have programs for not just cancer, but specifically brain tumor. You have sickle cell anemia. You have some pretty rare illnesses as well. What caused that to occur? Why did you go from 2 or 3 weeks with one specific disease process to year-round and many?
Well, the mission, as you stated initially, started with serving the oncology community. But there was also a need out there for other illnesses as well that had reached out to us, and that's how we kind of expanded to illnesses like lupus, the sickle cell, as you referred to, and also some rare diseases out there, Fanconi anemia. There was certainly a need for that community to have an area where they could meet. And we've actually become kind of the national symposium for when they get together. And it's just amazing to see the resources that take place at camp for our Fanconi anemia session there, where we have families come from all over the country, all over the world, to meet doctors that have come from all over the country, all over the world, to learn more about the illness and where they can go on their journey.
Nancy, you were saying that one of the things that was interesting about that aspect of things is that people can take a more active role in their own treatment plan and even in the research of the disease.
Yeah, we have three or four programs during the course of the year where people can come and they can meet people who are both doing the treatment of or research about their particular illness. And some of those illnesses are very rare. They're some of the bone marrow failure diseases, Fanconi anemia, Diamond-Black fan anemia, Shwachman-Diamond syndrome, and dyskeratosis anemia. And we're also starting to do that in the low-grade brain tumor community as well. And the thought would be is that people are stronger by being empowered with information, and that they can, particularly when you think you have something very rare and there's only certain places in the country where the illness is treated, it gives you the opportunity to meet people that you may later need for treatment, and for you to understand procedures. Say you're going to need a bone marrow transplant, to understand the dynamics of that before you are in a situation where you need that service. And it allows you to be able to kind of make connections that you might then later be able to reach out to those physicians and those scientists to be able to do. And, you know, in all of the illnesses that we serve, we have the same sense among families when they become connected to each other. But in some of the rarer illnesses, someone may go through their whole life not meeting somebody else. You know, when they come and they arrive in Maine, and it's the first time that they're meeting somebody with that illness. So it is a pretty remarkable thing that happens for people in that situation.
I was surprised to learn that you have people coming not just from Maine, but all over the country and really all over the world. And part of what you provide, because all of this is free.
Correct.
Part of what you provide is actually transportation from different parts of the globe. That's a big deal.
Right. We don't want not being able to get to camp financially or whatever reason it might be to limit a family from being able to get to camp and experience the resources that are available.
Nancy, one of the things that I think about, and I think in part prompted by an earlier conversation that you and I had, is the long-term implication of some of these treatments upon children and their families. And I believe you and I were having a conversation because we're writing an article for Maine Magazine about Camp Sunshine, and you were describing some of the treatments for kids with cancer that can have caused them to have problems with learning, with perhaps emotions, behavior. We think about chemotherapy with cancer patients causing hair loss and, you know, physical problems. But when you're giving chemotherapy or radiation to a growing body, then you're really impacting brain cells and a lot more things that impact learning than perhaps adults have to deal with. So tell me about what that means to the parents who have saved their child from dying, but now are trying to help them move up through their education, perhaps try to go to college.
So I think for everybody, when your child is diagnosed with cancer, your first reaction is to do everything that you can do to cure your child. And I think that's the focus of the medical community, it's the focus of the family, and it is very much the need at hand. I think one of the things that we see is that a lot of families of kids with leukemia and some other diagnoses who've had a tremendous amount of chemotherapy and maybe radiation, that in fact kids do have issues, some in executive functioning, some in learning, some behavioral issues, and it is very hard reentry back into the world where everybody is healthy and people don't have that experience. And I think when you look healthy, there is an anticipation that everything then goes back to normal. And I think it can be quite a struggle for a child and a family to understand what the impact of the illness was and then what kind of supports that they need. And sometimes you have kids who are old enough that they are aware that there was something that they could do pretty well before they were diagnosed, and then they have regressed to a place where it is much harder for them to do those things. And I think, so there's a lot of different struggles in how people learn what it is that the late effects are for them, then learn strategies to deal with the late effects and to understand if there are things that there will be hope that they can change and improve and go back to what was previously normal, or what things people will need to learn to compensate with as they grow. And I think that because those things are, again, less visible, it becomes more complicated for the world to understand. And for some people, it feels, again, like they're on an individual journey to have people understand that. And so then some of the empowerment comes to come to realize that it's not just your child that is experiencing this. And I think it's really hard for parents sometimes, because you feel like, what is your role in parenting? You know, did you do something, or is there something more you should be doing for your child? And it becomes a different battle when you realize that this may be, these may be things that are being faced by a lot of other kids in the community. So I think that there's a tremendous amount of education that needs to happen even after people are off treatment. And I think that is a way in which the pediatric world and the adult world are somewhat different. So there are late effects and maybe more lasting effects and more noticeable effects for children, but they're not as commonly known and managed.
And that's in direct contrast with, I guess, the lore of the camp is that the co-founders were watching a news report on television, and a reporter put a microphone in the face of a child who had cancer and said, "How does it feel to know that you're going to die?" And this was so striking to the founders of the camp that that they said, well, we need to do the, I mean, how horrible that one would ask a child that question, first of all. And second of all, what can we do for these children who maybe are dying? But Nancy, what you're saying is maybe they aren't dying. Maybe there are longer term survival issues. And this has all shifted dramatically over the last 30, 31 years that the camp has been in existence. So Mike, tell me how one, I guess, walks that line between knowing that you have children who are perhaps have been immune suppressed because they're getting treatment for cancer, but also want to go in the swimming pool, also want to go out on the lake, and perhaps maybe they need assistive devices, maybe they need a wheelchair, maybe they need crutches. How do you provide a full camp experience knowing that there may be different abilities that your campers and families have?
Right. Well, the camp facility itself is set up with that in mind. So many of the activities are geared towards having that ability for if a child does need some type of accommodation, that we can fill that need. Other ways that we work around that, too, is we also have a number of volunteers that help each camp session. But if we do have a child, and we call them a one-on-one candidate, we supply volunteers that would be just that mentor for that child. So if there's any need for accommodations, that assigned volunteer will be there for that child throughout the whole week to make sure that child can be inclusive with the rest of the groups. And we have other items around the camp. In fact, to get into the pool, we have a standard wheelchair accessible mechanical item that could get the children to the pool. We have on our playground a wheelchair accessible swing. We've developed a lot of different ideas into the program so that everybody will be inclusive into the different activities and events. And again, looking at the different varieties of where a child or where a family may be, we've adapted the program as well, or I should say expanded the mission. Along with our regular camp type sessions, we do have a post-treatment session, which is where we hope that the children go, but as Nancy had outlined, there's still issues attached to that as well. But we've designed a session specifically for post-treatment families.
There's also room in the schedule for kids to be kids and adults to be adults, and then for families to intersect. So that's an interesting thing. There's I believe adults have sort of adults' night out when the kids are,
right.
I don't want to say taken care of, but I guess are involved in other activities. Why is that important?
Just for the wellness of the families. For many families, many parents dealing with an ill child and the challenges of having an ill child haven't had any time for themselves, haven't had that one night out. So What we do at camp is we provide one evening where the children are under the supervision of the volunteers. Mom and dad, we transform our dining hall into a gourmet cafe area. They have a nice dinner, and then they get to be the star of the evening as they perform karaoke. And while they're kind of letting loose and just enjoying themselves for an evening, the children are well taken care of. We have a sleep out with the 9 to 12 group. We bring in things such as Owls of Maine to entertain the younger children. And while that's all going on, mom and dad can just, for one evening out of the week, you know, many times haven't had that opportunity, can just experience each other.
We also have these fun games, the Super Duper Blooper games, for adults and teenagers. And, you know, a couple of years ago we had an interesting experience. A child was out of her group, kind of en route to the bathroom with two volunteers, and she peeked her head into the games, and they're very funny, and people laugh all the time. And she saw her parents, and she turned to her volunteer, and she said, you know, my parents forgot to tell me that they know how to have fun. And it's just kind of like a moment where you realize that kids see their parents stressed all the time, but here they come and there's the talent show, and maybe their parents get up and make a fool of themselves in front of everybody. And in a way, it provides, the activity itself provides a very encouraging atmosphere, and it really does bring people back to kind of laughter and fun and recognizing that they can, even if they're in the middle of this illness experience, they can still have fun. And, you know, we're talking about activities before, you know, we have some programs like the retinoblastoma program where every child has an issue with sight. Some children have lost an eye to the disease, some have lost both. And so sometimes we will do something creative and we will have everybody, you know, wear, you know, a bandana over their eyes so that they're doing the activity without sight. Or we've brought in games that use different balls and different activities that have bells and different things in them so that everybody will participate in something and there'll be kind of an evenness about the experience. And we've had great luck in really kind of helping everybody see what the world is for the person who may not have sight. And so that's kind of like one example, but we have that happen in other programs related to the illness as well.
And we care some of the activities for that particular week that Nancy's referring to. We some of the evening activities more audio based. I don't know if you've heard of Rick Charette, who's big in the community around here.
He do something about bubblegum?
He does. He has a song about bubblegum, but he comes to camp at no charge for that week because he knows that the children have visual issues and he's all about music and making the children happy. So he comes in and donates his time and talents.
When you were showing me around the camp, you were telling me that one of the special things is that you can't necessarily tell. All the kids are divided out by age group, and you don't necessarily know which child in the toddler group has a disease and which child is the sibling of someone who has the disease. And you were also telling me that this is kind of an opportunity for a child who has cancer or Fanconi anemia to do something good for their family, to bring their family in. And it's only because of them that their family is at camp doing these fun things. And what a great gift this is. And that's not something that children who have an illness often have the opportunity to provide.
Right. Oftentimes it's the ill child that is getting all the attention and sees his siblings that maybe aren't getting the attention that they need or want for. And they're human. They feel bad about that. This instance here gives them the opportunity to kind of in a warped sense, because they're ill and able to come to camp, they're able to do something nice for their siblings. So it's because of them that they're at camp. And they kind of relish in that moment that they're providing this fun and joy for their siblings, and it's not just them taking this time.
And then there's, of course, always like the counter voice to that, which is entertaining, that sometimes kids who have illnesses like to use the fact that they are the reason that people can come to camp. And so I think that they remind their families of that on a regular basis in some situations. But camp is an amazing place for siblings because it is a place where our goal is to treat everybody the same way. So the only way that you may know that somebody is a patient is because there's a star on their name tag, because we want to be able to, in the event of any kind of an emergency, identify the person who's the patient. But it is a place where we have programming for siblings. We've given siblings a loud voice in their ability to have private time to talk about what the experience is like to be a sibling. And in a lot of situations, it is a really difficult journey for the sibling, because they may be home with relatives, with other people, separated from their family during treatment, and they may not always be the people who know firsthand everything that's going on. And they see their parents stressed, they worry about their siblings, they worry about themselves, they worry if it will happen to them. So we are a great place for them to have also that opportunity to understand what issues they're experiencing are really the same as other people. And then I think, as Mike said, it is a great place for them to come and have fun, and to also feel like this is a place for them as well. So I think that our goal is to have every member of the family feel special, and I think that siblings particularly connect to that.
Or in essence, all be treated the same. That's mm-hmm. kind of the magic of it, is that everyone's treated the same.
An important component of Camp Sunshine is volunteering. And it's not just volunteering. Every session has its own set of volunteers, and every session is roughly a week long. It sounds like you also might have some weekend sessions that go on as well. But you also have people who have volunteered to do things like make quilts. And I was struck by the fact that you had a group that volunteered to make quilts, and you have these lovely, they look like the units where people stay, the volunteers and the families, they look like very nice hotel suites. Hotel
yes.
suites. And you had so many people wanting to make quilts for these suites that you not only were able to do the initial beds, but you were able to give extra quilts. There are so many people that want to give to Camp Sunshine. That seems like that's an interesting place to be, because not every nonprofit has the number of people willing to volunteer that you do.
Right. Now, we've been very fortunate, and it kind of reaffirms your faith in humanity when you see on all levels. And the quilting that you referred to is when we were first opening up the facility, our facility that we're in now. We wanted to make it a little bit more homey. We had some folks in the quilting community that said, geez, we'd like to help. How can we help? And so we said, well, putting quilts on the twin beds and the bunk beds would be a great start for the families. And they said, well, how many? And we said, well, we have 40 rooms. So between a set of twin beds, a set of bunk beds, and a futon, each room required 5 quilts. So they said, all right, well, let's send this out to the community. And they sent it out to the quilting community. And as you said, we've got enough quilts to put in all the rooms, and enough to turn them over at the end of each week so we can wash them, as well as we have the buildings are decorated with the quilts also. So it's, you put the call out there, and you'd be amazed at the human spirit that what comes back. As far as each camp session, it requires between about 80 and 90 volunteers to run a camp session, as we divide the children into various age groups and want to make sure that they're all well taken care of. The ratios that we have at camp, I don't think you'll find anywhere else at any camp across the country. It's phenomenal, and we get a lot of support for that. And it's because of these volunteers that were able to run the camp. Each year, probably use the neighborhood of about 2,000 volunteers just at camp sessions. When you were out, you had asked me about how many volunteers do you think you've used since its inception in 1984. And numbers at the beginning weren't quite as accurate, but I'd say roughly in our 31 years, just in camp sessions itself, we're probably in the neighborhood of about 28,000 volunteers that have worked at camp. And that doesn't even factor in the volunteers that we use at our pumpkin festivals, at our polar plunges. So we're probably in the neighborhood of about 30,000 to 35,000 volunteers that have made Camp Sunshine happen, and we're very grateful for that.
And these are volunteers that you very carefully try to match with. You try to match their talents with the needs of the camp. You very carefully try to understand, make sure that the volunteers are appropriately educated and have the right background. I don't want to say background check. That makes it sound kind of onerous, but...
Well, no, actually, we do background checks on all the volunteers as well.
It's necessary and important. So these are people... So you've actually already vetted out probably other people, and you're still left with this enormous number of people who are volunteering.
Right. We go to various workshops and seminars, and we're kind of the envy of all the nonprofits that, you know, where do you get all these volunteers? And again, it's just the experience that happens at camp. They go home and they tell a friend or they tell a coworker, and it builds from there. But we vet the volunteers between reference checks and background checks. And as you mentioned, we do try to put them in a placement where it's going to be successful for them as well as camp. So if we have an individual that maybe runs a day camp or a daycare at home, more likely than not, we're going to put them in with our totlotters, our 3 to 5 year olds. So it lends itself to success.
Nancy, your husband is not a volunteer, but he's employed by the camp. As the medical director, and his specialty is I think it's pediatric
rheumatology.
So he's a pediatric subspecialist, but he's responsible. He's doing camp medicine essentially, and you're coming up back and forth from New York all the time. This has been an enormous commitment for you and your husband, and so for your family, really. Why have you continued to do this?
So Camp Sunshine is a pretty amazing model, and it is not the kind of thing that you could do in the middle of New York City or in the middle of a major city, because we're on how many acres?
We got about 30 acres.
So we have the ability to do things that, again, are hard to imagine someplace else, and some of it is the combination of this amazing facility and then the people that we've generated. You know, we're talking about volunteers, and you think about, like, where would you have a cohort of 80 people who come together in the interest, for the sole purpose in that week, to make the magic happen and to really be able to meet the needs of the families who are present and to allow people to feel like they are so special, and that dealing with the illness it's a big deal, but it's doable, and that everybody can help you do it. So I think that the commitment comes from the passion for the program, which really provides a tremendous service to families. And if you know people who are living with a life-threatening illness, you understand how difficult life can be, how difficult medical care can be, how many ups and downs there are on the roller coaster, and how, when people get bad news, what that means. But, you know, we have kids who have, you know, surgeries that I think some adults would never feel like they could recover from. And you know that a kid goes into surgery knowing that, you know, I'm going to have this brain tumor removed and I'm going to, in 6 weeks, be at Camp Sunshine, and I really want to be there. And I think that we have become a very interesting component of the medical journey for a lot of people, because I think kids are inspired to be able to get back and to do the activities and to be part of this. And so we become kind of like a home away from home, but I think an inspiration through the journey. And you become part of that. You become part of the mechanism that helps people actually live day to day with their illnesses. And I think for whether you're a physician or you're a social worker, the feeling that you can help and seeing that you help and seeing how much people value what you've done for them and how much they tell you you have helped them or that you have changed their life is something that is worth the many hours of commuting and the many years of commuting to do it. You know, when Mike was talking before about volunteers, there's this other component to the program where we've developed the opportunity for families to come back and volunteer and to give back to the community. We actually have an amazing donor that enabled us to build a building for family volunteers, and we have increasing number of families who've gone through the program and then are coming back to help other families. And, you know, some of the magic of that is if you're a parent of a child newly diagnosed with leukemia and you come to camp, it's the first time you're letting your kid go into a group, and there's a volunteer in the group who has a child who was diagnosed with leukemia 10 years ago, like who else could you be more comfortable with than to hand your child over to that person? So we have not only people who are volunteering because they are altruistic, amazing people, we also have people who are volunteering because they know how much we have helped them and they want to help and give back to the community that they have come from. So that, you know, you become inspired by watching 10, 12, 14 volunteers come and be able to share kind of both their illness journey and their experience with Camp Sunshine. So it's an amazing program.
Mike, I know that all of this requires money, And this is why you have some great fundraising events that take place over the year. You have some polar dips in October. You also have the Pumpkin Fest at L.L. Bean.
We do. That'll be coming up in October. Great fun. We're looking for volunteers for that, as well as folks to just come out and enjoy the day. We have bands, face painting, and there are a number of carved jack-o'-lanterns that they can see lit up. And much like our volunteers that help during the camp session, we have camp families to come out and help as well. It's just a nice day, and it's a great day of fun, so we encourage people to come out to that. That is in October. We also have a big Monte Carlo weekend that takes place at where camp initially started, over at Point Sebago. We actually have a camp session, oncology session, taking place at our camp and next door, going on at the same time at the big Monte Carlo weekend. And we look for people if they can donate any items that we put up for auction. That's one of our bigger fundraisers as well. You mentioned polar plunges. That'll be coming up probably sooner than we would like as it gets a little colder here. So that's a great way. And then we've had some great corporate support as well. This year alone, one of our biggest corporate supporter, Tropical Smoothie, stopped by camp and dropped off a check for $1 million. So very helpful to camp.
So those of you who are listening, if you have a Tropical Smoothie store in your area,
please visit.
Please visit and tell them that Camp Sunshine sent you.
Yes.
Thank them.
And thank them. What is the website for Camp Sunshine for those who'd like more information?
www.campsunshine.org, O-R-G.
I really appreciate the work that you've both been doing over the last 3+ decades now with Camp Sunshine. It was a pleasure to go out and spend time with you at Camp Sunshine, and I look forward to, I know our readers of Maine Magazine look forward to our upcoming article about Camp Sunshine. We've been speaking with Michael Cates and Nancy Sincotta, both of Camp Sunshine. Keep up the good work, and thank you so much for supporting the children and families who are going through so much.
Thank you, and thank you for having us and helping spread awareness about Camp Sunshine.
Yes, thank you very much.